Alrighty, if you could go see any Tom Petty concert from history, which one would it be? So one that you didn't go to, which one would you go to if you could pick any?
When they played in London, they played at the I don't know if it was the O2 or Royal Albert Hall or something, on one of those early tours, like okay. maybe 1981. And there are some cuts from that on the live anthology. And just to be able to see that era of them, because I didn't see them until 2005. So yep. it was back, you know, the post Last DJ. Ron is back. Steve Froney's there. But I would like to go back and see when they're at the height of their game, with the original five, with Stan Lynch on drums, and I really like the Heartbreakers live when Stan is the main harmony singer.
Yes.
I think he and Tom harmonized so well together, and it would have been good to see a young Tom and that original band, and maybe a few years after they've been going, you know, a post-refugee, give them all the songs,
right?
And then let's see them right there in that height. So maybe, you know, 1981 or something.
Oh my God. I would want to go all the way, a concert, a show. I think I would want to go back way to the beginning to Winterland.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right, right back then.
They were young and so full of energy and hungry and, you know, striving to get it. And, I think there are whiskey, you know, one of those shows, I think, from the very start.
Yeah. And I was funny that I was talking to Jake Thistle about that maybe, but thinking when I got into Tom Petty, it was later on and he wasn't quite as rowdy on stage. So when you see, right. when you saw sort of video footage, he was, you know, he'd kind of play and he'd move around a little bit. But those early concerts, when you see the footage from some of those, he's leaping around like a madman and going crazy. And you sort of forget that, the guy's a rock and roller.
Oh man, there was a series they did in London that's on the Sirius. There was a series of concerts, London concerts from 1980,
okay.
I believe. And I don't know how they recorded them so well and how tight the band was, but that was them sort of at peak live, to my mind. I heard that. The early phase, they're like different bands, you know, so from 76 to 82, 83 is probably one version of the band. Then you got sort of the Southern Accents version of the band.
Yep.
Then you got the Dave going into that middle phase, and then you got the post Steve stuff. But for that early stuff, probably the London 1980, I think it might have been March 1980, a couple of shows then.
Cool, man. Yeah, it's a good call. And again, you always think about I was talking to Dallas Hellicker, my first guest, about this. When I got into Tom Petty, when I was watching live videos, I was watching sort of later live videos. And he wasn't sort of he wasn't careering around the stage much. But when you watch those early videos, man, he had energy on stage. He was a performer, brother. Like, he's got some energy, you know? Yeah.
And that's the punk side of it. He had pure, raw energy connecting with the audience. No pretense.
Yep.
He would, one thing, I know we got to go. This was so cool. I'm so thankful that you wanted to talk to me about it. I really appreciate it. But there's a concert that I saw on YouTube. Is it Live at the Whistleblower or something like that?
Old Grey Whistlefest?
No, there's okay. something else. There's some other one. It was like an academic setting in England. And there was a heckler who didn't like one of the songs. And he said to the heckler, and they were going to play Luna, I think.
Yes, yes.
That it's like, oh, it's not one of your macho songs. Here's one. So he was at this very early stage.
Yep.
He was saying, I'm not your macho rock star here, and I'm not I'm not okay with that.
Yeah. So well, was, I know exactly which one you're talking about because it's when
I don't know where it was, but you know what I'm talking about.
He turns around and he goes, shut up.
Yeah, shut up. I'm not going to play your one. I'm going to play this song. And if you think it's a girly song, well, then to heck with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool.
I would go see it, like the Dogs with Wings or Wildflowers tour because I didn't get to see that.
Yeah.
So that would for sure be for me. And I mean, I'm so sorry I missed out on that stuff, but
yeah,
life got in the way.
Absolutely. And I never got to see them live at all. So you're way ahead of where I am, right? So.
Man, that's hard. I mean, I wrote about so many iconic shows in the book. I guess I would have liked to have been to the original Fillmore, you know, and so any of those several shows. But I think more than a specific show, I would have wanted to see the Heartbreakers as the backing band for Dylan's Neverending or the True Confessions Tour is what they were calling it at the time. Because they are a killer backing band. I think the E Street Band gets a lot of credit for being like, they can back anybody. But man, my money's on the Heartbreakers, honest to goodness. And there's bootlegs from those shows where Petty and the Heartbreakers were backing Bob Dylan. And you cannot tell that it's not Bob singing the song. It's where Tom has traded out a verse and it's Tom singing the song. And it's a dead impersonate Dylan, you know, which I think he tried not to do overtly, but it's there in the sound that we can still hear on those bootlegs, you know. I think I really would have just what they do when even Tom is led by someone else. And that's also why I enjoyed seeing Mudcrutch live, is to see what happens when Tom is led by someone else, because he is extremely capable of that and enjoys it. To us, it's like, you know what it's like? It reminds me of Meryl Streep in the ABBA musical movie. You know, it's like she's so above anyone else that's cast in that movie, and she's so experienced in ways that have nothing to do with this little production, little sidelong situation she's got going on. But like, she's so happy to be there to relax for a change, you know. And I just would like to see him relax. Acts into that type of flow.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, that the Mudcrutch thing, you know, who does that? Like, who, when you're an arena rock star and you can fill MSG and you can fill the Forum, goes back, finds his old buddies he was in a band with 40 years ago and says, you know what, let's just go, we'll go back out on tour. Let's dust off some of those songs, we'll write some new ones. That's doing it for the love of doing it. That's just the sheer love of doing it. You know,
and then to chart with one of those singles, which you didn't even write, the famous guy in the band didn't even write it. The drummer wrote it. Yes. Come on. That's precious.
Just beautiful. And you talk about it. It's funny you mentioned the E Street Band too, because when I was talking to Jeff Slate, he brought up we talked about this too. The Heartbreakers are such a criminally underrated band as a band, just as a band. And the E Street Band are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame alone without Springsteen as a band. Which is
I didn't know that.
Somewhat odd because
they have no albums,
no output outside of that, right? So I think the Heartbreakers. You know, and you talk about the Dylan tour, and we talk about Benmont being such a good player. He's the guy who was the Dylan obsessive, and Dylan comes out, we're gonna do Rainy Day Women, but we're doing it in F. So all the guys kind of look over at Benmont. He's like, watching this for him for the changes because they don't know now. You know, so that to be able to be that nimble. You have to be very, very, very good musicians. You have to be well rehearsed and just know your instruments and know the structure of the songs. And so, super cool. I'm totally on board with that as well.
The Fillmore 13 shows.
Right.
You know, if I had to limit it to one, I don't know, one of them.
Yeah, such an intimate venue, right? And that sort of, yeah, we're not playing now. We don't have to do the greatest hits tour now. These are our fans. We can, because it's a residency, we can pull off some of the old deep cuts. We can play some of these songs we haven't played in 20 years. So, yeah.
Now, I'm presuming, you know, I'm just using imagination because we haven't heard those
yet.
Songs,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. And, but, you know, you know, if I couldn't do that, then I guess I don't know. That's a really good question. I mean, I think he was more at his peak live when he was wilder and younger.
Yeah.
I would have liked. You know, I mentioned that the 30th anniversary, 2006, the 30th anniversary concert, which was terrific. You know, he got up and he said, "You know, we're going to have a good time. I hope you got the." You might need to call the babysitter and tell her you're going to have to stay late. So I'm thinking, oh man, he's going to play for 3 hours, but he only played for two, you know? And I would just wished he had like, hey, we're going to play till it closed down, you know?
Saying? Yeah.
But he did, but that would have been, I would have really loved that. But,
well, it's funny because that when I sort of thought about these questions, that's one of the ones that I would, that's sort of in my top five of shows that I would have loved to have seen. Just yeah. Because of the, I think it was the, you know, because it's back home and he's playing in front of his home crowd, that you could feel the warmth. You could feel that genuine sort of community sort of feel to that show where it was just a big party. It just felt like a big party. It wasn't a big band playing to a bunch of people. It was a communal thing. You really got that sense through the video, right?
Yeah, there was definitely a sense in the audience of we were very proud, very of Tom, and very yeah. happy to be there. And, feeling very fortunate.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I thought a lot about this, and I'm going to kind of cheat a little bit too, and I'm going with Super Bowl 42 because I'm a huge NFL fan.
Yeah.
I'm a huge New York Giants fan, and that's the year they knocked off the undefeated New England Patriots 17-14. But Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers were the halftime act and killed it. And the fact that they're not mentioned in the conversation of the greatest halftime acts of all time really chaps my ass because they were amazing that night.
Yeah, it was. I think, you know, because most or certainly a lot of halftime acts are lip synced, right? Because the network gets very nervous about if something goes wrong, are we going to lose this? If we lose the broadcast, that's going to really, really suck. But Prince, you can't tell Prince or Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers to lip sync or to mime. That's just not going to wash, right? It's not going to happen.
Bruce Springsteen as well. Yeah.
Even
just the production, remember that they had that heart boom, boom,
yeah,
boom, boom on the stage. And then you saw the flying V coming in. Yeah, the flying V came in. And then once it pierced the heart, fireworks go off. And they're playing American Girl. They just kick right into it. It's like, oh, that's so good.
I genuinely, thinking about that, the mental picture that all the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, just remembering when you see the lights, it's like, that's theater, right? That's going beyond just the music. Now this is theater as well. So,
yeah. And then they did American Girl, I Won't Back Down, Free Falling, and Running Down a Dream. Like just a perfect four-song set.
Do you know,
20-minute halftime. Perfect. Yep.
Get it. You understand the brief. That's the band that's understood the brief. It's like Queen live at Live Aid, right? Everyone, that's what Bob Geldof said. He said they understood. They understood what we were trying to get, you know.
This is hard. I mean, the Fillmore run seems pretty great. But I will say the 1986 True Confessions tour with the Heartbreakers opening and backing Bob Dylan.
Right.
That's what I would do. That would be crazy.
Are you a Dylan fan as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do because like what it, I mean, just that happened and that they have said that it happened at that point in their careers, that they would then embark on a tour where they're backing anyone and not just like taking a vacation and also, yeah, also playing Heartbreaker songs. I mean, I don't know. It's just, it speaks to the commitment to craft and not ego.
Yeah.
That is so critical to my understanding and connection with Petty and the band. And like up against the iconoclast that is Dylan, really fascinating. Would have loved to have been at that on that tour. And then I would have, this is also kind of, this is cheating, but if I could have been at the 2004 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame performance of my While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Oh God. Yeah.
With Petty and Prince.
Yeah.
I would have died right on the spot.
Yeah. You call it, like in the book, you call that the best solo of all time. And I can't muster any argument against that, because it's as a performance, as a piece of playing, exactly. Technically, it's astonishing. And then melodically within this, and I love, my favorite bit of the whole thing is, you know, Prince is Prince and he's cocky as hell and he knows he's good, right? Because he is. But he does that little, he plays a little lick and he looks over and you can tell he's making eye contact with Petty, but he kind of does that little nod, that little communication. Yes. It's so cool, you know?
So good.
Yeah.
It's so good. But like, what a sign of like, I mean, cockiness, but also respect to because like, you could be the type of guitar hero to be out there and you're not looking at anybody else. You're like, I'm the show.
Yeah.
I'm not part of what we're all doing here together, but he's also in it with them and Petty is leading the band.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I just think the dynamic is perfect.
It's because he is like, that's dead right. He's part of a band there because they rehearsed. You know, and they, I think, I guess he said, like, I'm going to do something. I've got something in mind. Is it okay? And everyone said, yeah, no, it's Prince. We'll trust Prince, you know. And the other thing I love about that performance is Danny Harrison is just like a kid in a candy store watching him. He's laughing his head off. And that's delighted. The joy of music, you know. It's so, so inspiring to see that. I love that.
Yeah, I love that. So that I would also be at. But yeah, I feel really lucky that I got to see Petty and the Heartbreakers so many times. And I do also wish that I had been able to catch the last anniversary tour.
Yeah.
My mom did though. My mom and Jim and Barb.
Oh, nice.
They all went. So I feel I'm consoled by that, but I was sad.
It's hard. Like, I don't feel like I know a lot of historical Petty concerts, but there's one I watch on YouTube a lot, which is that Winterland 78 show where he gets pulled into the stage.
Yeah.
Like, they are 78. I mean, top form, world-class rock and roll band. The set's pretty good. There's energy. So I would like to be there. But also, I would be interested, just for personal reasons, because I've thought about it a lot, it being at some of those LA shows at the Wiltern that were recorded for Back at the Plantation. Now, there's tracks on that album that weren't recorded there, but the bulk of it is from those shows.
Yeah.
And I've thought about those shows a lot, and it would be very interesting to see the vibe of those shows.
Yeah.
And then there's also the show that I think was in North Carolina where he finally said, we don't do this, where he kind of put his foot down about people bringing the battle flag to the show. And it would be really interesting to be in the room to see how that felt.
Just to get the mood of the crowd and see what the sense of the tenor of the sort of, that would be really interesting to see that for
sure. Like all the actual shows I saw were late career, right? Probably not before 2010. So I would love to see one of those high 70 shows. Would be really incredible. And the one that I watched the most on YouTube is the Winterland show.
I don't know if what the specific concert would be, but my favorite live footage of him is the stuff on YouTube of when he did the Old Grey Whistle Test.
Okay.
Which was like 1978. And I think they were touring on You're Gonna Get It.
Yeah.
And that version of the band, or like how he was dressed, where he was wearing dress clothes and he had the sunglasses and the flying V and he was wearing shoes and he was like super skinny and shaved. He was sort of like doing this kind of clean cut. He was like something about the dress clothes and the clean cut and the sunglasses. It was like almost like Miami Vice fashion or something, but it's like cooler than that. It's like not annoying and like macho asshole version of that.
Yeah.
There's something about that I like, and the band was sharp, and like him, that set they did on Old Grey Whistle Test. I know that doesn't count as a concert, but like, the band in that shape, in that moment, which I guess was like 1978, that's when I would most want to see them.
Well, I think it is it's a performance. It's a live performance. So there doesn't have to be 20,000 people there for it to be a concert, right?
Cool.
I don't think.
All right, great. Right?
Because my answer was the whiskey, which would have been, I don't know, what's that, 400, 500?
Right.
That
sure.
Point. So absolutely. Sure.
Well, I have to say that I would like to go back and have seen them just for my own edification, see them when they were really new.
Yeah.
You know, I his shows got kind of standardized over the years once he had the final version of the band.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I love going to Wilco shows. I've been to like 6 or 7, but
okay,
they've gotten pretty much the same when you go to see them. You know, I know when I got to take my bathroom break because they're going to do, you know, that one love song thing, you know, but so it's like that. So I'd kind of like go back to I'd like to go back to like maybe their first big headliner gig.
Okay.
When they were in the early version, you know, when they came back from England and then they hit a Hollywood Bowl or some big, one of those big shows when they're really still kind of raw and just all full of that energy. Tom got pretty tired looking near the end, you know.
Well, he's old, you know, man.
Yeah, you know,
his hip was not good, and you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he got where he looked like he was a little bit done, and I would like to see him when he was just raw and edgy early on. So if I could opt for a ticket, that would be one of the shows.
It's funny that you say that, because that's one of the things that I answered these questions for my 100th episode, and that was one of the ones that I'd like to go to as well, is because I got the same thing. When you get into Tom Petty later in life and you see clips of him playing live, yeah, he's not moving around that much. He's playing the songs. It's still a good show. But in those old days, man, he was a lunatic.
Leaping around,
dancing and jitterbugging. It's like, yeah, I want to go see that Tom Petty, you know.
Well, I'd like to hear how raw and heavy the band sounded back then. You know, like when they did American Girl or Refugee and they were just, you know, they had everything cranked up high and all that, you know. I don't know where I saw an episode of where they were filming Tom. And it's funny, the sound was like only coming from the monitors. So you're hearing what Tom and the band would hear on stage. And I was like, wow, this is pretty, you know, there's not much to this. I mean, they're playing the chords. They know what chord they're playing. But when you get out in the audience, of course, it's blasting. And I was like, holy wow. And then it felt really low energy. So I'm like, let's go back to where they played some club, you know, and they just pulled in off the road, right? And they're just still half lit or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And just, you know, it's just one of the nights when the magic happened and they just burned down the place. That's the kind of thing I'd like to see.
For me, I think the Gainesville homecoming show, that 2017 or shit, was it? I can't remember.
It was an early one. I mean,
it was early, but it was like he was definitely 2007, I guess it was.
Yeah.
Remember they made the documentary too at that time.
Right.
That concert to me, just because of the love coming from him and, you know, coming back to Gainesville. And I just thought he put in extra, the whole band put an extra love into it. For me.
And that version of Learning to Fly from that concert.
Oh, exactly.
That's just unbelievable.
Yeah. So
like, you know, that thing where all your hair stand on end every single time I watch that.
Absolutely.
Part of that show, it's just, that kills me.
Gosh, I would say one of the Fillmore shows. I would love to have been on a Fillmore show. I would like to have the Fillmore show where he plays that song I played for that old homecoming queen. You know,
the ugly old homecoming queen.
I think that song, which I actually I saw the Dirty Knobs play before Tom passed, and I asked Mike, you know, I said, you should play that, you know, we start playing that song again. He said, yeah, that's a good idea. I'll start, you know, we'll start incorporating that in our Dirty Knobs. Yeah. So
interesting.
Yeah, I'd love to see any of those Fillmore shows. I mean, they were just incredible.
I think the last one, if I'm going Fillmore, that I think the last one, because they played like 3+ hours, you know, they just wouldn't get off stage. They did like 9 encores or something stupid and just kept playing because they were having fun, right? So
Yeah. Exactly.
So I got this down to 3, and I have had to pick one, but the 3 that I kind of narrowed it down to were the Whiskey in 77 when they opened for Blondie, because I just think when you see a band when they're still really fresh and really new, the energy you get from a bunch of musicians who still want it and they're hungry is totally different from a stadium rock act who are sort of just touring on, you know, sometimes on reputation. So 77 would be cool. The Gainesville show from Running Down a Dream, I think, you know, being in the crowd for that rendition of Southern Accents would have been very, very spiritual. Or the last night at the Fillmore. I was looking back through. Have you ever looked at the set list for that last show at the Fillmore?
Yeah, it's incredible.
Insane. 40 songs, 23 covers. Their encore was 11 songs. Like, so that would have been amazing. But I think, like I said, I think that we've got a lot of concert footage of Tom in his later years. I think that Whiskey in 77, and even seeing Blondie in 77 would have been freaking cool too. And I, you know, it's easy to forget too that was the LA debut for both bands. Neither of those bands have played, so to get them both on stage in the same room, like, my god, yeah, that would have been
super. It would be really hard to pass up the 40 song Fillmore.
There's tons though, right? I mean, being in the crowd, like Michael Washburn brought up a good one where he said, like, being in the crowd that night when Tom told everyone to quit it with the Battle Flags, just to see what the mood of that audience would have been and see if it shifted or whether if there was any real tension there, that would have been cool too, because obviously that was a troubled tour, but the energy would have been completely different as well. So that would be another one. That would be sort of a fourth outlier kind of thing that I would kind of throw in. So